Welcome to the Redemption Church Podcast, located in Seattle, Washington. As a church, we are a community striving to be faithfully present to God, self, and others. We hope this is an encouragement to you in your life, no matter where you are. Thanks for joining us.
This morning, we're reading Mark 5, 21 through 43. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. And she had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him, but he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning, everybody. Good to see all of you. Hey, real quick, before we jump in, we're going to have two kids getting baptized later today, which is pretty awesome. Yeah. So really, really cool. All right. So let's do it. Decided, Katie, here's a fact, and I'm just going to go. I can pick on Katie. She's one of my best friends. If you bring a metal, like, Yeti tumbler into church on a Sunday morning, it will tip over. And I don't know if it's God, the devil, maybe just occasional clumsiness, I don't know, but it will. So just know that. All right, there you go. Love you, homie. All right, so enjoy your coffee. All right. Mark chapter 5, verse 21 to 43. There's about 10 pages of notes over there. I figured, let's get out of here before lunchtime. So I'm going to go just no notes. You scribble down whatever you want. And if you want notes, I'm certain I'll miss things. If you want the PDF, we'll send it to you later. All right, let's go. Mark chapter 5, verse 21 says this, "And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea." Okay, in the previous passage, as you learned last week, Mark was talking about when Jesus drove out the demons out of the demoniac, restores this man from a dehumanized state to becoming part of society again. Jesus has now left a Gentile region, right? There's pigs nearby, there's Gentiles, there's demons. Jesus has now come back into Jewish territory. It's kosher. There's a There's a synagogue here. Jesus fits right in. But what Mark is showing you here is that Jesus actually fits in both places. You see, prior to Jesus showing up in human history, in a Jewish context, you have the clean and the unclean, the insiders and the outsiders, those who belong, those who don't, those who God has clearly established a covenant with, and then there's kind of the rest of the world. But when Jesus comes on the scene, those categories are suddenly shattered because there's a Son of God and everybody else. And the ones that are squeaky clean actually need to be made even more clean. So Jesus now goes back into a Jewish context. A great crowd has gathered about him beside the sea. And there came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. Another person that, if you want to look into these guys, Nicodemus, the more famous one in John chapter 3, right? For God so loved the world, that particular passage, that's another ruler, a religious leader. Jairus was likely a wealthy man. He was an educated man. He was a respected man. They live in an honor-shame culture. So Jairus was put in a position of esteem, of prominence. He had authority. People listened to him and what he had to say about God and the world and how life in their community should be carried out. Jairus sees him. He's a ruler of the synagogue, which means he organized weekly worship and liturgy. He explained the Torah. He oversaw most likely the maintenance of the facility itself. He's a ruler of the synagogue. And seeing him, Jesus, he fell at his feet. Now, Jairus probably had a relationship with Jesus to some degree prior to this moment. As you know from Mark's gospel, Jesus has been traveling and teaching with authority in the synagogues. And it's likely that Jairus had probably had at least one encounter with him and certainly knew enough about Jesus' teaching, Jesus' authority, Jesus' influence, how Jesus speaks on behalf of God, how he teaches, unlike all the other scribes. Jairus knows at least something about him. And he knows enough to run to Jesus. And it says he fell at his feet, he bows down, and he begs him or implores him earnestly, saying, My little daughter is at the point of death. Come lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. So this man, a man of esteem and prominence and honor, all of a sudden is now bowing down before Jesus. We bowed down a few minutes ago in church, here in worship a few minutes ago, because your body tells you what your soul is doing. And we, especially Westerners, we just do this. We think we have a spiritual life over here, a private life over there between ourselves and God, but our physical life is ours to be lived. And so we can live our lives in certain ways, and then when we're confronted on certain sin or something, we just go, well, I'm actually worshiping God, like, in my heart. Like, me and Jesus, we're really good in my heart. It's like, odd. You just cussed that guy out. Are you sure? You know? Like, we break our spiritual life and our physical life apart. And Jesus consistently introduces the reality that, no, your physical life gives rise and demonstration to what your spiritual life actually looks like. Out of the overflow of your heart, your mouth actually speaks, right? This is how Jesus introduces what life with God looks like. And so when you bow down, your physical body sometimes can preach a whole sermon to your soul rather than the other way around. When you kneel, when we knelt a minute ago, could you kind of notice that? Going, oh, I don't actually kneel down very often. This is a posture of submission, of humility. This man is throwing himself in front of a crowd that he usually has authority over and leads. And now he's just not interested in saving face at all. He does what any dad would do with a sick daughter. He just throws himself at Jesus' feet and says, I'm begging you, please, please do something. Being a pastor, you kind of get a, not kind of, you do. You get a front row seat to these kinds of moments more often than most, I think. Therapists do too. And they're hard moments. This man is at his wit's end. And there's no better place to be at your wit's end than right there at the feet of Jesus. So he's at Jesus' feet and he begs, please come lay your hands on my daughter. I know what you're capable of. Verse 24, and he went with him. My spiritual director, his favorite word is with. And sometimes he'll talk about like his whole time with God, sometimes during a day, will just be to take the word with and sit with the word with for an hour. And he just turns it over. I'm with God. I'm with Christ. I am with the Holy Spirit. I am with. That Jesus goes with him, and we don't know the conversation that they had, but we know that Jesus didn't lead out and leave the guy in the dust and go, okay, I'll, and Jesus take off running. And Jesus didn't go, will you lead the way? But Jesus goes with this man, and we don't know if they have much of a conversation. We know they're surrounded by a lot of people, and it's busy and hectic, and Jesus has gathered an enormous amount of influence and notoriety, but he goes with the man. These are some of those moments that if you just mark your Bible, that would be a word worth marking. He went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And now we have this new character come onto the scene. They're going, and a new character pops up. My friend Brian, he talks about these characters and stories. He's a storyteller, so he tells me about how stories work. And this is what's called a clone character in storytelling or in movies. Like a simple analogy would be like the three little pigs. You've got the first two pigs, and to offset the third one, they all look the same. They all kind of have the same kind of ideas. But those first two clones, you know, straw, sticks, then there's the bricks. It's another clone character. Watch this. It's really amazing anyway. There's a woman. And she has a discharge of blood for 12 years. She suffered under many physicians and spent all that she had and was no better, but had grown worse. So now look, the story's perfectly told. You've got a rich man in religious authority with a lot of influence and power. And he's also named. We get his name, Jairus. She shows up. She gets no name. She has no money. She spent it all. She's unclean. She has no power. Both of them are now right here in the midst of the Son of God. And we don't find Jesus playing favorites. And she had spent all that she had on physicians and was not made better, but had in fact grown worse. Most scholars kind of assume, and you can look into this if you like, but she had something where basically she had begun her menstrual cycle at the age of 12, roughly, and then had, it just never stopped. Just awful. Beyond the physical discomfort, the social ostracism and being put out. The law would have said she was unclean. She didn't have to live in a colony, say like a leper, but nonetheless, she was removed enough from society to go, I'm not like everybody else, and I don't fit in like everybody else because I've got something going on with me that I can't help. It's a dark and lonely and tragic existence. It's almost like a death before death, you know? She has to live a life of absence, which is the death before death. But presence is life before life. So, what does she do? It says in verse 27, she had heard the reports about Jesus, and based on the first few chapters of Mark's gospel, he's reported some pretty fantastic stuff. Teaching with authority, touching lepers and making them whole, raising a paralytic in chapter 2. In chapter 3, he touches the man with the withered hand on Sabbath day. Not supposed to work on Sabbath, but Jesus is clearly just pushing everything to the side to restore people. She's heard that Jesus talks about like the kingdom of God's like a mustard tree that just sprouts its wings and lets all kinds, right? She's heard that Jesus has driven the demons out of that guy across the lake, and he can make everyone right. So she's heard reports about Jesus. And she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. So we don't know all of this woman's theology. She probably hadn't read Romans. In fact, for sure she hadn't. But we do know that she's got enough faith that if I brush up against Jesus, something's going to happen to my life and I won't be the same again. That's all she had. She was just as broke as Jairus at this point. I don't know, but if you can get involved in this situation, you can turn it around. That's essentially what she had. And we might be going, was she superstitious? Probably. There's a lot of superstition in the first century, especially in a context like this. And yet her superstition and her faith and this report about Jesus of Nazareth was enough for her to go, I'm broke. I have no more money. I'm physically put out. What's there to lose? I'm going to try. So if I touch even the hem of his garment, I think I'll be okay. And so she does in verse 29. Immediately, the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Can you imagine this being a condition for 12 years, and then all of a sudden just, oh my God, I just pickpocketed a miracle out of the back pocket of the Son of God. It worked. What would you do? What would you feel? She was made well, like, just suddenly. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? And the disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and you say, who touched me? Jesus, you've got paparazzi. You've got people everywhere trying to get near you. And he looked around to see who had done it. Jesus is interested right here. Somebody touched me. Somebody came here. No, guys. Somebody came here looking for healing, hope, salvation, restoration. Somebody came here thinking that I could do something for them. I felt it. And here's why this is so important, that Jesus is insistent and persistent about this. It's because Jesus doesn't want to be pickpocketed with miracles and not have a relationship with the person whom he restores. You catch that? It's the same thing he does with the lepers. Remember when he heals 10 lepers? 9 take the miracle and run. 1 turns around and comes back and falls down and says, thank you. Thank you. And Jesus says, where's the 9? It's because Jesus is here for more than to hand out miracles. Jesus wants a relationship with the person whom he heals. Let that sink in, especially for a weary 2022, I guess. It's hard to keep up with time anymore after the last couple of years. But 2022, with a weary soul, maybe your own, that says, I know he moved into my life when I was in high school or college or somewhere along the way. Jesus moved into my life. And does he still actually want a relationship with me to the degree that I think he used to? And the answer is absolutely. Who touched me? I don't want to just give out miracles. I want relationships with the people who touch me and whom I come into touch with. Who touched me? So he feels this power go out. He says this comment, asking, and the woman, here we go, the woman, knowing what had happened to her, she's like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be in this crowd. I'm kind of standing there in the crowd holding Jesus's wallet kind of thing. Like, she knows what had happened to her. And now she has to take a bigger step of faith than the one she took 5 minutes ago before she touched him. Now she has to identify, I'm the one that did it. It's one thing to move in and touch Jesus's garment when he's walking by. It's another thing to go, I think I'm this crazy. I was crazy enough to think that I could brush up against Jesus and be made well, and it worked. It took a tremendous amount of faith for her to identify herself there in that community in front of Jesus. And she knows what had happened. So she comes before him in fear and trembling, shaking. And now here's another person falling down, kneeling before him, and told the whole truth. Here's the whole story, Jesus. Here's the whole thing. I'm 24 years old. This is what I've dealt with all my life. Moses says this. I've spent all my money on that. I heard you were coming to town, and I didn't know anything better to do. I was told not to come around you because you're a kosher Jew, and I've got my stuff, and I can't. Here's the whole story. So I snuck up behind you, and I touched the hem of your garment, and now I feel like I've been made whole. And I know I got all these eyes on me. I don't know. This is the whole story. This is all I got. And I touched your robe, and now I'm healed. That's the story. I heard you aren't afraid to touch people with leprosy. I heard that you tend to stick it to the religious hierarchy and run those hyenas off just so that people like me can come back in. That's what I know. That's what I got. There's the whole story. You're not going to take it back, are you? I didn't even ask. I didn't even give you my name. Of course, Jesus is Jesus. It's perfect. He just says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Be healed of your disease. He uses a familial term, daughter, you belong. You belong to me. You're healed. Go. And I guess she goes and enjoys a life being brought back in. And while he was still speaking, here comes another move in the story. There came from the ruler's house, Jairus' house, someone who said, your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any further? They've come to this point of going, I know Jesus can heal this person and he can cure leprosy and he can do lots of things. But death is kind of the end. So just let's not bother Jesus with this one. And by all practical measures, that seems right to me. I would have easily been that guy. Like, that's probably it, right? Don't bother at this point. And the man is now traumatized. I mean, Jairus is standing here. Jesus just adopted a daughter. And now this man, Jairus, is standing here going, your daughter's died. I mean, we can't skip that as though like that would be an easy thing for any dad to hear. He's traumatized. Birthdays and holidays, graduation, wedding days, grandchildren, whatever things the dads think about in relation to their daughters, watching them grow up and do what some women get to do. And all that's over in the matter of a moment. And so the man's now dealing with the traumatic loss of a sudden death. If you read your Bible too fast, you'll miss things like that. You got to read slow and go, oh my gosh, put yourself in the shoes of the characters every once in a while and go, oh, that's awful. Feel the thing, feel the weight of the text, feel these things. Your daughter's died. But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." It's like, look, I heard that. And he's just like, I need you just to keep your eyes on me right now. I know what you just heard. And I'm not going to ask you to bury your pain, ignore your pain, you know, compare your pain to somebody else. I'm not going to ask you to do anything with your pain other than to be present right now with me. Don't fear. Don't be afraid right now. I know. Your world is shaking. It's crumbling. You're coming to your knees right now. I know. I don't want you to be afraid. This whole world is afraid. I don't want you to be afraid right now. Don't be afraid. Just believe. Be with me. And so now Jesus is asking Jairus to take another step of faith. Just like the woman, right? She took a miracle from Jesus, and Jesus says, you need to identify yourself. And so she did. Now Jesus is doing the same thing with Jairus. You thought I could heal the sick a minute ago. I need you to take another step of faith. It's this interesting move that Jesus makes in our lives. I think more often than not, when we hit rock bottom, oftentimes I've found that he does not throw us a rope. He throws you a shovel. It says, dig deeper. That's been my experience, and I'm willing to bet, knowing most of your stories, that's been yours too. Right when you're down here, he's like, I need you to dig a little deeper. You did come to church today, you know. It's like, man. And so, don't fear, only believe. And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John. That's your inner three, brother James. And they came to the house. So there's five of them. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And this is how they did things. They had professional mourners. This is still in play in certain cultures around the world, but there would be a full mourning party, people that would be paid to come and wail loudly, get in circles, dishevel themselves, cry, sing, clap. It was quite the dramatic thing, and it was an aid to help the grieving bring their emotion out. And so there's a commotion. People are wailing. Jesus finds what would have been traditional. And he goes into the house. When he entered, he says, why are you doing this? Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child's not dead, but sleeping. I wonder what Jairus thought. No, she's died. And then verse 40, it says, and they laughed at him. You got to mark things like that. They scornfully dismiss what's impossible, the same way we do. Like, we laugh at people especially when someone's saying something that sounds just so unbelievably silly, asinine, we laugh at those people and we take a higher ground. So they laugh at Jesus. And they'll laugh at his followers too. They will. They do. Like, following Jesus is not all roses. There are days in which people do just laugh and scoff and roll their eyes. They do. When you talk about what Jesus has to say about almost any given subject, the eye rolling and the laughing comes. Sarah laughed. I'm too old for a baby. People laugh at the impossible nature of God. So they laughed. Jesus didn't pay any attention to it. He just puts them all outside. Like, while they're laughing, he's just like, I know, I know. Silly son of God here. Out you go. I've got work to do. You can carry your jokes on out in the front yard. So they're laughing. Jesus puts them out. And he took the child's father and mother. So he takes the parents who were with him, goes into private where the child was. And he says, taking her by the hand, Numbers chapter 11 says that if Jesus were to touch the dead, he would immediately become defiled and would be put out of the camp. But again, Jesus does what Jesus does. Taking her by the hand, he says to her, Talitha kumi, which means little girl, I say to you, arise. So now a woman's touched Jesus. Crowd is thronged about Jesus. Now Jesus is touching the hand of the dead. Says to her, arise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking around. And in parentheses, for she was 12 years of age. So now we've got two women that were put in the unclean or the insignificant parts of their society. And Mark is keen to note 12. Did you catch that? So the unclean woman had this issue for 12 years. The girl that had died was 12 years of age. What's going on here? Under God's sovereign providential hand, Jesus steps on the scene and has both of these women's stories intersect on the very same day to the glory of God as he brings them up and brings them back in, bypassing all social, political, cultural, and religious norms, because Jesus is about bringing people back in and making them whole. Wow. On the same day, the same hour. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. Okay. If that's the gospel that you just heard, that Jesus made these two people whole, then you might be tempted to walk out going, gosh, I so admire Jesus. Jesus is the most amazing example. But that's not the gospel. Like, Jesus doesn't need any more people in a crowd thronging about. Jesus is so disinterested in making you a fan or a secret admirer from a distance. Jesus is interested in converting you, in making you a disciple, a heartfelt, resolved follower, to deny your flesh and exalt him at every cost. You see, the gospel is shot through with something that other religions and philosophies don't bake into their core, and it's called humility. Throughout this whole passage, what do you find again and again? Is somebody kneeling, bowing. Jairus bows. The woman bows. But the gospel's not about just example. It's about a substitute. It's about a savior. In Mark's gospel, in chapter 15, Jesus bows. And it says that when he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, he kneels and prays, Abba, Father, if you're willing, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but yours be done. That's on Monday, Thursday. On Good Friday, Jesus is handed over to the Romans. And as he's being beaten, what do? They bow. They put a reed in his hand and a crown of thorns on his head, and they begin to mock Jesus and laugh at Jesus. Now they're bowing. And then when they pierce Jesus to the wood of the cross, the centurion that nailed Jesus to his cross, he bows and says, truly, this was the Son of God. And after Jesus triumphs over the grave and sin and death and hell and disease and uncleanness and all the things that make life so difficult and painful, after Jesus rises from the dead, the apostles bow, and then the church begins to bow. And so the church throughout the ages up till this present moment, because God has highly exalted him, every knee will what? Bow to Jesus, unto the glory of God the Father. The gospel is shot through with humility because the King is filled with glory. So I don't know how this finds you today. If you find yourself in a posture of, I feel outside, I feel unclean, I feel unworthy, you need to know that there is a King who is not afraid to touch your life, your soul, where you are, and you do not have to pretend, you do not have to pickpocket, you do not have to hide. You simply come before the King, fall on your knees and say, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Would you, in your mercy, touch my life and make me whole? That is what the King has come to do, and his answer is yes. Oh, and the last verse, it says he strictly charged them not to tell anybody and to give her something to eat. And the good news of the gospel that we celebrate week by week after Jesus' resurrection, he strictly charged them, tell everyone, come and eat.